Welcome to The Art Career, a space breaking barriers by letting you sit in on candid, straightforward conversations with leading art professionals in visual arts, writing, music, theater, and film. I'm your host, Emily McElreath, and I invite you to join me for inspirational conversations with icons of our generation. We dive deep into topics like self-development, career trajectories, mental health, social justice, and the artists that have changed our lives. With each episode, our mission is to empower you, expanding your journey through the arts. Join us for new episodes every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts. The Art Career is thrilled to announce its partnership with Glimpse. Glimpse Guides are a collection of luxury guidebooks with an outstanding social mission we are proud to support. Featuring the best of hotels, restaurants, activities, and itineraries for each featured city, Glimpse Guides also include recommendations and travel tips by a curated selection of tastemakers. The most exciting part of Glimpse Guides is 100% of their profits go to Give a Glimpse, which provides funding for educational travel scholarships for underserved students. What is better than that? Glimpse believe that travel is the most important form of education, and it is their mission to send as many deserving students abroad as possible. Glimpse also offers luxury trip design services with VIP perks like early check-in, room upgrades, restaurant and spa credits, welcome gifts, and more. Glimpse has quickly become our one and only travel planner. Go check them out at glimpseguides.com and tell founder Jordan Rhodes that the Art Career Podcast sent you. Christine Kwan is president and executive director of Creative Capital. Kwan was formerly CEO and director of Sotheby's Institute of Art, chief curator and director of strategic partnerships at Artsy, chief curatorial officer and VP for external affairs at Arstor, and editor-in-chief of Oxford Art Online, Grove Art Online at Oxford University Press. She has also worked at the Metropolitan Museum of Art and taught at the University of Iowa, Peking University, Rutgers University, and Stanford University Arts Leadership Program. Kwan holds an MFA in poetry from the Iowa Writers Workshop and a BA in art history and English literature from Rutgers University. The Art Career Podcast is thrilled to welcome Christine Kwan, who is president and executive director of Creative Capital. Christine, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Emily, for having me. I'm so thrilled to be on your podcast.
So I obviously review very carefully everyone's bio before interviewing them and talk about a multifaceted, multi-hyphenated, impressive bio. I mean, you have quite the CV under your belt. A couple things, you know, I would love to touch upon everything. We obviously can't. I want to focus mostly on, you know, what you're doing right now, obviously, at Creative Capital. But I also want to hear a little bit about your background, you know?
Yeah, I've been working in the art world for over 25 years and very, very fun, but also feel that I've taken on really mission-driven organizations and roles. And Creative Capital is one of those roles that I really love because it is so mission focused.
I'm 42 and I'm just in the process of being like, okay, all right, I'm arriving where I think our 40s, I can only speak as a woman, but they're just such a beautiful decade of like realizing so much about who we want to be in the career stratosphere. Do you agree?
I totally agree with you. I think there's such a myth around aging and how horrible it is for women. And I would just say to any young woman listening, it just gets better and better and life doesn't stop. And opportunities, there's more opportunities now than I ever had in my 20s. And it's just extraordinary. And it has nothing to do with, it also has nothing to do with how you look. It's just who you become. And you become a better and better person because you become wiser. And that's, I think, exciting. And the media doesn't tell you that.
No, they don't. And in our industry too, I mean, it's all the network you build with your personality and your outreach and who you are. And it's just, I second what you just said. I mean, it's such a daunting, this idea of aging for women that we deal with. And really, when I can shut all of that off, I've never been happier. I've never been more successful. And from what I understand from my friends that are a little older than me, and it just does keep getting better. You know, it really does. And there's Botox. So
yeah,
done.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, I heard about that too. I've never done it, but I've heard about it. Anyway, so welcome. Can you talk a little bit about your background? We can't touch upon everything, but I really want to hear your story.
Yeah, I think since this is really about career, I think it's interesting to note perhaps for people who are listening, I'm first generation Chinese American, born in America in Ohio, raised in New Jersey. Always interested in the arts, but was pre-med my first year in college because, like many Chinese parents, they wanted me to be a doctor. And really, my heart was in the arts. And my second year, I switched to art history and English literature. I love looking at art. And I think a lot of people in the arts really just enjoy experiencing art. So that's been a real driving factor in the way I made my decisions around my career. And so after college, I went and taught in China for a year through Princeton in Asia, came back, worked in New York at a gallery selling antique jewelry. So for anybody who's really interested in antique jewelry, we could talk about that. And then I went to grad school at the Iowa Writers Workshop in Iowa.
Yeah, so, I came across that and I was like, whoa, curveball. Not that you haven't utilized all of that knowledge, I'm sure, in your career, but that is the workshop, right?
That's the workshop. Yeah. And I think, you know, now that I'm at Creative Capital, I really understand how artists feel. It's really about having time and space to pursue your art. And Iowa Writers Workshop is one of the leading, if not the leading, writers organization, institution for poets and fiction writers. And it's 2 years in Iowa City, and you're just writing and hanging out with other artists and other writers and devoting yourself, your time and energy to the pursuit of writing. And so that was a real luxury. And then I came back, worked at the Metropolitan Museum, worked at Oxford University Press, Art Store Digital Library, Artsy, Sotheby's Institute, and now I'm at Creative Capital.
No big deal.
No big deal.
So I have to, just because I'm curious, were you a fiction writer or were you a poet?
I was a poet.
Really?
And yeah. And I could say I am a poet because I think it's very, it's still, I think, of influence in the way that I work. I think brevity, being concise, being clear is very important. And so much of getting things done and building relationships is being able to communicate. So it's been really influential in the way that I work as an arts professional as well.
I completely understand what you're saying. I did my master's thesis on fine art and poetry therapy. I've taken an enormous amount of poetry classes in my life. I almost want to say I know as much about poetry as fine art. That's probably not true anymore, but it was true certainly undergrad, grad school. So poetry is an enormous part of my life, always has been. I interviewed Eileen Miles last.
Amazing.
And it was just, I was more nervous for that. I was like, it's just fangirl nerves, you know, it was such a big deal for me. So anyway, that industry I'm very interested in, and that's so cool that you're a poet as well. I love it.
It's so cool that you are also really passionate about poetry. I mean, what's very interesting is you find out when you tell people that
totally
you're a poet is that you find out they're poets too. And actually everybody's quite passionate about poetry. So it's really exciting. You know, Brett Gorvey, who has this great Instagram post, he's always posting poems. You know, so many people are really passionate about poetry, which is great to see.
I love it. So, okay, fast forward, you came back, you worked at the Met. What were you doing at the Met?
So at the Met, I was in the Asian art department. It was actually a Mellon-funded project to train Chinese museum directors from mainland China to study Western museum practices. And so my job was to translate and to follow the director of the Forbidden City, the National Palace Museum, around the Met. And by, you know, default, because I was in all the meetings, I learned how to run one of the best museums in the world. And so it was a fantastic program. It was really exciting to learn about the inner workings of the museum. And then after that role at the Met ended, I went over and worked in the general counsel's office for, I think, 2 or 3 years after that as well. So I learned a lot about how things are actually done.
It's interesting. I'm thinking about, you know, the difference between being young and getting a job in the arts, you know, 20 something years ago, and being young and getting a job in the arts now. Obviously, the different economic impacts that our city has gone through, what's happening right now. And it's funny because you and I have, I mean, totally different CVs, but, you know, always jobs in a creative field. And, you know, so you leave Iowa, you get to New York, you're working at the Met, you're somehow supporting yourself because you're not making $100,000 at the Met.
No,
right?
You're making, at the time, I think my salary was like $12,000.
Yeah, I know.
Actually, it was not enough to live. So for anybody who's thinking that I was living off that, I wasn't. Saturday and Sunday, I would work at a commercial gallery. So I worked 7 days a week. When I told my students at Sotheby's Institute, they were totally floored that I worked. But I was like, well, you kind of had to work 7 days a week. And then there was also, you know, as we all know, I mean, there wasn't the expectation you would eat three meals a day. I mean, you would just kind of like have a big right. meal when you could. And then you'd have like cereal.
A power bar in between. Yeah.
Yeah. You'd have like a power bar or like cereal some other times. But yeah, it was really different, but maybe the world was different. It was before smartphones.
Yeah. I think the world was really
and
different.
Really, yeah. And you were really, weirdly, it was less stressful because you just lived in the moment. Mm-hmm. You weren't constantly like checking what your friends were doing or seeing that like somebody else was like eating more meals, you know, like it was a really different, and you really just enjoyed, I would say I enjoyed it, even though there wasn't any money in it. I really enjoyed it and I learned a lot. And I think there has to be a willingness to learn and an understanding that maybe when you're starting out, you don't know everything yet and it's time to absorb.
It's totally time to absorb during those times in your life. I remember when I finally left, I worked as director of education at the Brandt Foundation for 6 years. When I finally left and started my own art advisory, which I still have, you know, not until like 4 years ago was I able to be like, okay, I know my shit now, you know, like really, like I am confident that there is no one better at my job than me, you know? And I really believe that. And in our industry, you can't have that at a young age. It's other industries you can, maybe, but like this is the beauty and the necessity of being a sponge for a really long time. And that really long time may include eating one meal a day and then granola bars. Because the fact of the matter is there's this misconception, and it's, you know, I guess it's spot on for, you know, a percentage of us, that there are these just really wealthy humans that work in the art industry and they can afford to get paid $12,000 a year and, you know, go out to dinner every night. And that's just not the case for a lot of us. And
right
there, I talk about this all the time, you know, like when I went out on my own, I was very poor for a couple of years, you know, I went from making like a really decent salary to nothing. And so, I mean, I guess this is cliche, but you really do have to be super passionate about what you're doing to survive in this industry.
Yeah. And I also want to, for anybody who's listening and like, oh my God, that's terrifying, I wouldn't do anything differently. I don't regret not becoming a doctor. I think the other flip side of the coin is being in a career for 48 years, 50 years that you don't enjoy. And starting out, yeah, it's a struggle. But I also think I have friends who maybe became lawyers instead of artists and now are wondering why they're still practicing something they don't really want to do with their time. And they're 50 and it's too late to go back to the starting point and start in the arts again. So I do think pursue what you really love and invest time and energy in it. And I think it'll pay off.
Yeah. And, you know, some of us, if I had taken any other path, I don't even think I would have survived. I think like in terms of mental health and sustainability, like I don't know, you could never have put me in a cubicle. You know, I probably never would have gotten through med school. It's just, you know, it's definitely, it's a very specific mentality to be in our world, but it's worth it. So, okay. So now this very rapidly brings us to creative capital and your position. Now you were brought on as president and executive director. What year?
2021.
So
2 years ago.
Okay. And where were you right before?
I was running Sotheby's Institute of Art in New York, which is a graduate school. Yeah.
I know Sotheby's very well. You were running the education department?
Right. I was running the graduate school. It's accredited. It's a nationally accredited graduate school. It offers master's degree programs, non-credit programs, pre-college, summer programs. So it was created by the auction house in 1969, and then it became a separate private school, which is affiliated with the auction house, but no longer run by the auction house. So it's fully accredited, and it's a real graduate school. Like some people are like, oh, is that a real graduate school?
Yeah,
and I'm like,
no,
yes,
it's very
a real graduate school. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you were there. It's during the pandemic, and Creative Capital reaches out to you?
Yeah, I was there for 5 years. It was really a fabulous experience. I'm still in touch with many of the students who've gone on to do amazing things and start their own companies and work at some of the top galleries and auction houses in the world. It was a global school. So I also have friends and students who were from Hong Kong, from Paris, from, you know, Mexico City, all over. And then, you know, at the height of the pandemic, the school grew a lot because a lot of people couldn't work. So they decided to pursue their master's. So the school was doing really, really well. Everything was great. And I was sort of at a point in my career where I was 5 years into Sotheby's Institute and Creative Capital reached out. And I thought, you know, I got into the arts to work with artists. And I hardly ever run, when you're running a school, you hardly ever work with artists directly anymore. And I just thought it'd be really great to work at a mission-driven organization like Creative Capital, which gives grants and services to artists around the country. And I've loved every minute of it.
Says, as part of your mission or on the website, to champion artistic freedom of expression, to be at the forefront of discovering and fostering the creation of radical art, and to build a wild and wondrous artist-centered community that inspires a global public.
Yes. So the history of Creative Capital is really interesting. We were founded in 1999 after the National Endowment for the Arts discontinued the majority of its grants to individual artists. And it really was an effort to silence artists of color, queer artists, women, et cetera, any sort of voice that didn't sort of feel like it was mainstream. And the Andy Warhol Foundation felt that this was really important to fund individual artists as a part of defending freedom of expression. And I think artists are always pushing boundaries, artists are taking risks, and it's important for Creative Capital and other allies in this field to nurture risk-taking voices. And so that's what we do. We give grants to underserved, marginalized, and risk-taking artists in all disciplines. It's not just visual arts, but also dance, theater, jazz, technology, and literature.
And that's so cool. I don't know if you know this about the podcast. This started out as just a fine art podcast, and it has evolved pretty rapidly into, you know, I would say the majority of people I'm interviewing are within the fine art industry. But again, you know, Cheryl Strayed, Eileen Miles, I'm going to interview a few musicians next season. So it was important for me. And that's why I loved reading about you all, because we get so focused on just the fine art industry. It's quite snobby sometimes, you know, and there's this just like whole universe around it. And I'm sure what you're seeing, because I've seen so much of it, especially in the past few years, there's so much crossover now. There's more crossover than ever before. There are so many of these like champion partnerships, and I don't know, I'm just seeing really like this interwoven structure within.
Yeah, so many.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So many artists, so many great artists are interdisciplinary and multidisciplinary. Titus Kaphar is one of our grantees, very well-known, famous painter, but also, as probably many of you know who are listening, he's also a filmmaker. We are funding a number of artists who are making pivots in their careers. Teresita Fernandez, very well-known visual artist, is being funded by us to help create a new opera by Teresita. So that's really exciting. And there's also collaborations, like you mentioned. So Sidra Bell, very well-known dancer and choreographer, was just on the Today Show. She's collaborating on a project with Emmanuel Wilkins, who's a very well-known jazz musician. So there's just so many rich collaborations and projects that we're involved in.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds it. I really have enjoyed learning about Creative Capital, how the Art Career is thrilled to announce its sponsorship from the New York Studio School for season 4. Founded in 1964 as an intensive studio arts program with an emphasis on perception, artists learning from artists, and drawing as the most direct means of describing one's ideas or experiences, the Studio School offers an array of full-time and part-time programs that prioritize small classes and individual guidance from dedicated instructors distinguished in their fields. It is located in the heart of Greenwich Village in a National Historic Landmark building that was once home to the original Whitney Museum of American Art. The school invites you to join its free public programming, including the evening lecture series, which for more than half a century has been a cornerstone of the New York City art world and can now be experienced worldwide via live streaming. Visit nyss.org to enroll in classes, see what's on in the gallery, register for evening classes, and more. To learn more about full-time study at New York Studio School, schedule an in-person tour or a virtual meeting by emailing info@newyorkstudioschool.org. This question should come later in our conversation, but how can we get involved?
I love that question.
It's usually last, like, how can we get, but really, like, let's talk about that. How can we get involved?
I mean, the easiest way is signing up for our newsletters, watching and participating in our events and programs. We just had a Creative Capital Carnival, which is this artist gathering, and we showcase all the new projects in progress that we're funding. That's on YouTube. So if you want to see what the 50 new projects are for 2023 and what we're funding. So just to make it very clear, these are not projects that exist yet. These are the new ideas that the artists are getting grant funding from us to start working on. So you're really getting insight into what's to come. So it's like 5 or 10 years out before this project is going to hit theaters, you know, before it's going to be in movie theaters and, you know, on stage and in museums.
So an artist receives this grant.
Yes.
And then what? Is there a time limit? What does this look like?
So typically, we are a project-based grant funder. So for those of you who aren't in grant making, the artist applies through a national open call. An open call means any individual artist can apply. You don't have to know me. You don't have to be friends with somebody on our board. You don't have to be nominated. You just submit your project idea. And a project is anything. It's something that, you know, something you want to paint. It's a series. It's a new movie that you want to make. Whatever your project is, you submit it. And then we send it out for external review. So dozens and dozens of experts around the country see every single artist application that comes to Creative Capital. And so the gift to the community is not only that the artists get seen, but also that, you know, experts in, you know, the arts ecosystem get to see what's happening in the country this year. That's really useful too. And then at the end of all of this, we have a panel and we select 50 projects. They get up to $50,000 each to help realize that project. So usually the projects are in very early stages. So it's just an idea, or it's year one, or they secured some of the funding, but they still have a long ways to go. So it's really a boost at a catalytic moment in the artist's career, but also it could be funding a pivot. So a lot of people ask me, oh, is it just for emerging artists? No, it's for emerging artists, mid-career. You could also be a very established artist, but you're making a pivot. Like you're a painter, but now you want to do a film. Or, you know, you're a jazz musician, but now you want to do dance. So this is where we're trying to step in to say, we're really here to support artistic practice. We're not here to just hand out money to people who've already had very successful careers, which is a very different type of award.
Yeah, absolutely. And correct me if I'm wrong, you know, I was fortunate enough to know I wanted to start something like this podcast for a while. So I had been saving money because I knew that once I, you know, this is out of pocket right now until I start monetizing, which we just started doing. But point being, I was fortunate enough to have money saved to then cover me for the first year and a half. Is the money that's granted, it doesn't matter where, like if I were to be a part of Creative Capital and I got that $50,000, that doesn't need to go to the film equipment. It can just help me sustain while I build the idea out. I think it's a misconception for some people that don't understand this world.
Yeah, the way, and we're very unique in other ways as well. So first of all, it's an unrestricted project grant, which means
that's awesome.
Anything to advance the project, which could be childcare.
Yeah, I was just going to say childcare.
You know, walking your dog. You got to pay a dog walker so you
Hell
can
yeah.
get to the studio. You got to repair the plumbing. You got to buy a new phone. Whatever it is the artist needs to advance the project, it is unrestricted. The other thing, as many artists know, is planning funding for a project is very difficult and complicated. And most of the time, there's certain things that funders are attracted to funding, and then there's other aspects that are not attractive for funders. So what's valuable about the Creative Capital Grant is the artist does not receive the check in the first year. The artist can request the funds when they need it. So sometimes artists will say, look, I know I've got the Creative Capital Grant sitting there. When this film gets to post-production, that's when I'm going to need the funds, because I already have funding for X, Y, and Z on this production. But I know when I get to year 4 and year 5, when I go to post-production, then I can draw down the Creative Capital funds. So we're really enabling and empowering the artists to plan. And that's really valuable, because a lot of grant makers, you know, you get the check whether you like it or not, even if the bulk of it goes to taxes because the artist has had a really great year. So we're really trying to say to the artist, you have this funding set aside, you can plan around it. And that's, yeah, and that's what's been really powerful. So some artists are like, I need childcare this year, I'm going to draw down some funds. Next year, I'm going to need a research trip. I need to go abroad to Africa. I'm doing some field research, whatever the artist needs.
What is the criteria? Like when you're applying, when you're looking for who's going to receive this, you know, I interviewed Jeremy Blocker, who is the director of the New York Theater Workshop, and he was talking.
Oh, it's a great.
Oh my God. They're the best.
Amazing.
Yeah, yes. I've known Jeremy forever, and it was such a fun interview that we got to do on stage too. So that was really fun. But yeah, he was talking about the fact that I'm going to botch this, but when they're awarding, you know, their whatever their programming is to these young artists, it's not based on like how, like, it sky's the limit in terms of like, whoa, this is a really out there idea that we don't know is definitely going to be super popular, lucrative, what have you, but we're still going to, it's the idea, it's the creativity behind it all.
Exactly. And Creative Capital, just because of its origins, you know, when the NEA stopped funding these sort of risk-taking artists, we are looking for artists who are experimenting, a project that is adding to the cultural discourse. It's trying something new. It's doing something different. It's innovating in some way. And when I joined, we changed the application so that it's much, much shorter in round one. It's 6 really simple questions. But the first question is, tell us your idea.
Okay.
And that's really where it starts. So, you know, it may be that your idea is painting stripes, but why is it innovative? Why is it interesting? What are you trying to accomplish? The second question, I think, is, I don't remember if it's the second or third, is, you know, who's your intended audience? And what kind of reaction do you hope that they're going to have? So it helps the people who are reviewing look at the project and say, okay, this is a really cool idea. I've never heard of this before. And, you know, this is really interesting how they're trying to engage this community or how they're trying to engage this audience. So we're really trying to add to the cultural landscape rather than reinforce, you know, marketplace or commercial tastes, right? So we're really trying to say, let's be ahead of where the market is. Let's be ahead of where culture is. And very often, some of the artists that we funded, like Simone Lee, we funded in 2012. Simone Lee was the first Black woman to represent the U.S. at the Venice Biennial in 2022. But we've also funded Pope Elle and Nick Cave and Christina Wong. You mentioned the New York Theater Workshop. We funded Christina Wong really early on. And so we're really trying to use this national open call to uplift artists who may not have had their projects seen before. And then I think when we talk about equity in the arts, we're also thinking about how does uplifting different artists from different communities and different backgrounds, you know, further diversify the arts ecosystem and help them give back to their communities. So we're thinking about it in a really holistic way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so deeply interested in everything you're sharing, and I'm learning a lot too. And I think, you know, these programs, I think we assume we understand what's going on, but it really is interesting to kind of dive into the rootedness of it all and talk to you about it. So what, first of all, we're going to link the, it's called the Carnival, right? We'll link that in show notes, because I think it would be a really fun thing for anyone to be able to click on. And obviously we'll link all the things.
As someone extremely passionate about mental health, seeing a therapist is essential to my quality of life. We'd like to take this moment to announce how thrilled we are to partner with the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp. If you think you might be feeling anxious, depressed, or even just overwhelmed, being alone with your thoughts can be an isolating feeling. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't even have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. You just fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then you get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. It's that easy. Join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. And just for the Art Career podcast listeners, we will offer 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/TAC. That's better, BETTER, help, HELP.com/TAC. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring the Art Career podcast.
What's happening right now with Creative Capital? What's next? What are you most excited for in this moment?
Well, yeah, I mean, to your earlier question about, you know, how can people get involved? We are not endowed. We don't have an endowment. We raise every dollar that we give away to artists, and we've given away $55 million over the last 24 years in grants and services to 901 artists. But we also provide professional development workshops, and we just launched a brand new curriculum, which is like how to write an artist statement, how to build a budget, and we've made it all free for artists. And so if you're interested in supporting the work that we do, you know, feel free to support with a donation or just to spread the word. We've been sort of behind the scenes doing this work for a very long time, and we really want the public to start to know about this work, because the funding landscape is changing and we really need more people to get involved and support this kind of work. So a lot of what we do is free, actually. A lot of the things that we provide to artists, such as the email news, an artist opportunity listings, which is a compilation of all the grants and services all around, so that artists can just check one place and be like, oh, there's an artist residency opportunity, or there's a grant here. So we do a lot of that stuff for free, and we fundraise to keep all of that open and accessible to the public.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And I'm already dreaming of all the ways that we can work together moving forward, because you're doing, I mean, there even these, like the fact that you're putting out all of these free resources, and the fact that, like, I didn't even know that, you know, and I'm someone who, that's like a huge part of my job is helping artists, you know? And I just, you know, that's, I am gonna forever, you know, just push my artists to be involved with you all, because that's so, you know, from someone that also, you know, I put free content out there. I'm not, this is not a money-making endeavor, and this is, but, you know, it's that content that's created by super passionate people that's free that is better than any paid content, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have over 80,000 artists who access our services around the country, but also globally. And the new curriculum that we launched is also free. It's on the website. It's free for individual personal use. And we're talking to academic institutions and other nonprofit institutions to partner with us to support this so that we can keep it free for individual artists. We're really trying to serve artists in the broadest deepest way. And there really seems to be a continuing need for these kinds of services.
Oh my God. That's for sure. That is for sure. And you know, I can say that just from being in our industry, but, you know, I think it's so important for creatives to, I always talk about the importance of, you know, connection and having mentors and all of that, you know, because so much of the time within these creative industries, especially in the fine art industry, as, you know, an artist, it can be a really lonely place, you know, if you don't have those resources to go to.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're saying something that we hear a lot about, which is being an artist can be really isolating.
Yeah.
It can be really lonely. And a lot of the work we also do is investing in community building. So Creative Capital Carnival, which we talked about a little bit, but you'll see on our website a recap of the event. But it's a national artist gathering of our grantees, industry, press, supporters, to really promote and celebrate the artists' new projects that they're working on, but also all of the artists in our community, and for them to have a chance to bond and get to know each other and see each other in person in a sort of stress-free way where they don't have to perform and, you know, be on.
They're just building community.
Yeah, and spending time together and getting to know each other as human beings. And it's extremely valuable. We found during the pandemic, a lot of artists were able, of our grantees, were able to reach out to each other for support because their projects were delayed, because their projects got canceled, because they had to come up with a new format, because, you know, they couldn't put the play on in the theater that they had planned to. So there's just so much value in building community. And I think also with climate change and everything else that we're seeing, we have to come up with alternatives to the way that we've been doing business. And, you know, artists having each other as support structure is really important.
It's close to everything, you know, for a million different reasons. Well, first of all, is there anything else that you wanted to share with our listeners about Creative Capital? And then also, you know, I just want to say, like, we don't even need to oversaturate this interview with like a lot, because I think our core message here is so important, and it's so important to spread the word about what your institution is doing right now, that I kind of, you know, I'll ask the listeners to really, you know, after listening to this interview, go, you know, click on the links in the show notes, acclimate yourself to what Creative Capital is doing right now, because it seems to me that, you know, you're one of the top resources in the industry, and not just fine art. You know, that's why this is such a beautiful conversation too, because it kind of crosses all of those barriers and incorporates everything that the podcast is passionate about and our audience. You know, there's a lot of overlap. So
yeah, I mean, I also think, you know, one thing that I was just on a call earlier this morning, we were talking about, you know, there's so much media about how you can't develop a career in the arts and how it's difficult to be an artist. And I just want to, I'm sure, Emily, you and I both believe there are so many roles in the arts that you can't even imagine in high school, that you can't even imagine in college. And there's grant makers, there's administrators, there's podcasters, there's bloggers, there's influencers, there's people who are curating, there's people who are, you know, so I would just say one really interesting thing I learned when I joined this role, I was given a study, you know, about arts and its contribution to the U.S. economy. Arts contributes more than agriculture, more than construction. I mean, this is a huge economic engine for this country. And we've also seen that places where there are artists and vibrant arts communities have a direct impact into really vibrant communities. And it really matters to fund the arts, and it really matters to fund artists, because it really influences the entire local community. And it's transformative in so many ways. So it really begins with artists and the arts. And I think, Emily, all the work that you're doing to broadcast incredible careers in this space is just so valuable, so that people realize, no, it's not a desert. It's really a really vibrant field of, you know, exploration and discovery and innovation.
Yeah, I love what you just shared. It's because it's so true, you know, it's so very true. And, you know, the purpose of having these candid conversations with, what I say, and I'm proud to say, some of the most talented people in the world, right? That's who I sit down and I talk to. And the most, you know, it's to make it approachable. It's to make it like, okay, you know, like, let's break this down a little bit. How did you get here? What does this really look like? There's so many assumptions going on in the creative industries, and things can become romanticized and quite the opposite. And, you know, it really, there is so much opportunity. If you have the passion, right, and you have that drive, you have to have the drive. But if you have that, there are so many opportunities. And, you know, I think that many people think that we all got to where we are just by being super gifted. And you probably, it's equal, right? But for me, it's like 80% hunger and drive, you know? And then I learned the things along the way. This wasn't like I was, you know what I mean? And so that's
a lot of hard work. It is. I mean, I think everybody I know, you know, you look at all the art world parties and like the champagne and the glitz and the glamour, but every single one of those people is hustling, and I'm hustling. I mean, everybody's working, you know, and I think it's being at the top of your game, being informed, being open to learning new things, and participating and showing up. I mean, I think so many people, especially post-pandemic, showing up really means you care. And I think going to artist openings, going to performances, being there means so much to people now, because a lot of people just don't show up anymore. They're just on the couch, which is always very comfortable, but
it's the best. The couch is the best. And I can't tell you how often I'm on my way somewhere and I'm like, I would kill to be watching Netflix on the couch right now. But then it's that playwright or artist or friend that just, you know, and they need you there, you know, and that's everything to show up for each other. It really is. And that's a reminder. I feel like I could always be doing more of that, you know? I think that's actually a beautiful way to wrap up, just with that importance of supporting each other, you know?
Yeah, I think for everybody listening, it's going, buying the concert tickets, you know, buying the movie tickets, really going to the exhibitions, collecting young artists who are just starting out. Those are all things that signal to an artist to keep going. And I think it's really important for everybody to participate in the ways that they feel comfortable. So yeah, that's I think our message, Emily.
I love it. And those signals are everything. You and I have gotten, we have been lucky enough to get those. And for me, that has just like pushed me to the next level. Oh, this person showed up. This person thinks I'm doing a good job. Not that we always need outside reinforcement, but like, damn, we do sometimes, you know? And it's like, okay, like, let's keep going. So yeah.
Yeah. And to artists especially, I think showing up is a lot. It's almost everything, because the last thing you want to do is give a concert and have half the seats be empty. It's just really demoralizing. So everybody who's able to get out away from their TVs, like go out there, that's really important. Readings, you know, book launches, all of that matters so much.
brave. You know, you don't realize how brave it is until you get yourself into a situation where you're like, wait, if no one shows up tonight, this is going to be really fucking hard, you know? And like, this is going to be a huge psychological and emotional blow for me, that there are going to be repercussions. And some of us are better at, I mean, certainly I have experienced a lot of failure, but those moments where you like really need people to show up, the people that show up, you never forget who showed up.
Absolutely. You never forget. Yeah. It means everything.
It really does.
Well, yeah.
This has been such a joy.
This was so great. I'm so glad to learn you're a poet and you love poetry. So we're going to compare notes. Thank you so much, Emily, for having me.
Christine, thank you so much. This was a pleasure. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of The Art Career. If you get value from this podcast, please consider helping me make more of these episodes by becoming an Art Career Premium member at theartcareer.supercast.com. That's theartcareer.supercast.com. And please don't forget to rate and review. Every rating counts. Thanks so much.